All right, I will say good morning. Good morning. Let us begin by thanking all of our sponsors for this morning's shiur. To thank our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Teves. Mrs. Selma Wolf for dedicating all Shimon and Drushals this month with immense gratitude for the refuos from Hashem and the merit of a refuos shlema for all of those in need and the schus of our brave soldiers and the return of our hostages. Leah's soul as a schus for refuos shlema for her daughter Ilana Bas Esther and for the safety of our soldiers and the safe return of all of the hostages to their families. Our Daf Yomi sponsors for today, Baruch Meir and Rina Dubin, in honor of the birth of Gavriel Karapkin, grandson of Shmuel and Rabin Karapkin. Beautiful, beautiful dedication. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, this little boy, Baruch Hashem, will enter into Torah, to Chuppah, and to Meisim Tovim. And of course, we dedicate all of Maseches Baba Kamo, Le'iloi Nishmas, Master Sergeant Elio Michal Charush, Hashem Yikom Damo. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, his Nisham will have an Aliyah, and the family in Nechama. All right, we'll see with that. We have a lot to do today, Baruch Hashem, a lot of beautiful Gemara, but we will, my goal is that by tomorrow, by the end of tomorrow's Shir, we'll be all caught up with the rest of the world. So the Gemara says as follows. We are up to, today's Daf is Samech Aleph 61, but we actually left off on Samech on the days 60b, three lines down from the top. Tan Rabbanan. Dever Be'ir, ultimately, again, there's pestilence. Some people say Dever literally means like pestilence, but it often is the way Chazal just generally refer to a plague. So if there's a plague in the city, Dever Be'ir, Kenos Raglecha, stay inside. Stay inside. Shenem Marba Temlo say to Ishmi Pesach Beso Ad Boker. Now the truth is that pasuk is actually talking about over here by Makas Bechoros, and the Torah says, "Don't leave your home. Don't write death of the firstborn. Don't leave your home until morning." Now the idea that the Gemara is saying over here is you see that when ultimately again there's some destructive force unleashed, better to stay inside. VaOmer Leich Ani Bo Bechadarecha Uskor Delascha Ba'adecha. The pasuk says, "Go, my nation, into your room and close the door behind you." Again, it will say the rest of the pasuk over there is "Chavi kimat rega ad ya'avor za'am," and wait a moment until the anger passes. So the idea over here is that when there is this unleashing of divine justice, go inside, close the door. Va'omer michutz. Gemara over here quotes the pasuk from Devarim. Michutz tishak el cherev or mechadarim ema. Literally on the outside, the sword will cause bereavement, and on the inside, bechadarim in the rooms, ultimately there'll be fear. So the Gemara says, all these psukim obviously pointing to the same idea, which is when there is a time of danger, go inside, close the door. My vulnerable, what does it mean vulnerable? What's what in that last pasuk? This is incredible. V'chite mahani mili b'layla. Aval b'yamamalo. So you might have thought this is only a din of going inside at night, but during the day, perhaps you don't have to go inside. Tashma lech ami bo b'chadarecha uskar dalascha. Right? Therefore, the pasuk says, go into the room when there is divine wrath, when there is divine justice, when there is this plague. Go into the room and close the door. V'chite ma hani mili hecha daleka ema migavoi. Avahecha d'ivzav. So I might have thought. Furthermore, when does it mean to go into your room? When does it mean to go or close the door? Be alone. Right? Avoid groups. When is that true? When there's no danger or no challenges on the inside in the home. Maybe if there's danger in the home as well. So we'll say this is incredible, the Gemara says. See, when do we say maybe go into your home and close the door? That's when being indoors, being in the home is less dangerous, ultimately, again, than being with people. But I would have thought like this. Maybe when there's danger, both in the home and outside of the home. Better to be outside of the home because at least you could be with people. At least you could be with people. There's a power to being with people. So I would have thought, therefore the Gemara says, Tashma, mechutz tishak al cheret, umechadarim ema. Afagab mechadarim ema, mechutz tishak al cheret. Therefore the pasuk says, sometimes again there's danger on the inside also, danger in the home. But when the danger outside of the home outweighs the danger inside of the home, better to remain inside and close the door. Rabbi said, but the Havamina is such a profound Havamina that if there's danger inside and outside, at least it's better not to be alone, right? At least it's better to be with people. At least it's better to have achdus. At least it's better to be together with Am Yisrael. Such a profound idea. But therefore, the Gemara says, that's true if the danger is the same. But if the danger still is more acute outside than it is inside, then ultimately better to remain indoors. Again, Rose said that this is also meant to be from the Isaac Chazal, practical advice. Practical advice, next. The Gemara says, Rava be'idan rischa, have sachar kavi. Rava, at a time, he calls it rischa, means divine anger. But Rashi translates it as dever, pestilence. When there was a plague going on, so what would Rava do? He would close his windows, dichsiv, or seal up his windows. Dichsiv, ki Allah maves b'chaloneinu. The pasuk says, because ultimately, again, death has come through our windows. Tan Rabbanan, Ra'av Be'ir, if there's a famine in the city, Pazur Aglecha. The Bosei Pazur Aglecha means literally stretch out your legs, which means get out of town. So it's interesting. When there's pestilence, right, the advice of Chazal is go into your house, close the door. Right, like ride it out. When there's famine, the advice of Chazal is get out of town. Get out of town. Shneimar vayirav baaretz vayirat avram mitzrayma vayagar sham. They will say it's incredible. Where do we learn everything from? From the Torah. How do we know that when there's famine, get out of town? Avram Avinu comes to Eretz Canaan, beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha. He encounters famine. So what does he do? He goes to Mitzrayim. He moves. Va'omer imamarnu nava ir varab ba'ir v'masnu sham. So we'll say this is the story. The Gemara tells in Malachim Beis, the story of the Mitzoroim, who again didn't have food to eat, so they made a conscious decision where if we don't have food to eat, we're better off leaving where we are, where we will certainly die, and go to the encampment of Aram, which was a foreign army. But they decided to kind of roll the dice with that. So my Vomer, what does it mean Vomer? When do you relocate because of famine? When the relocation itself doesn't entail a possible threat to life? But maybe when there's a possible threat to life, maybe you don't relocate. Tashma, luchu v'napila machane v'nafla machane aram imechayenu nichya. So we'll see from that story of the four Mitzorayim that ultimately, even if going to another city entails some level of risk to life, some potential risk to life, halacha l'maisi is still go. Okay, incredible. So we'll say, let's go back to it. Turn Rabbanon. Dever be'ir. If there is, literally, so remember, we're translating Dever as pestilence, right? So if there's pestilence in the city, Ayahalich Adam Be'emtza HaDerech, don't walk in the middle of the street, right? Don't walk in the middle of the street. Why? So remember, the theme that we've already begun to see since yesterday is that when there is Midas HaDin, when there is the divine attribute of strict justice, and what we call the Mashchis, destructive forces have been unleashed. Sometimes those destructive forces are unchecked. So that's why we saw in yesterday's daf, right? That at the end of the day, that when those destructive forces are unleashed, even tzaddikim suffer. So along these same lines, the Gemara says, if there is dever be'ir, if there's this outbreak of din, right? Outbreak of pestilence in the city, don't walk in the middle of the street. Why? Because one of these plagues means that the powers of destruction have been unleashed, and that means they're everywhere. They're everywhere. So don't walk in the middle of the street. Because since the Malach HaMaves, the angel of death, has been given permission to roam freely, ultimately, again, he roams freely. So stay out of his way. Shalom be'ir. On the other hand, if there's shalom in the city, ayahalech b'sidei drachim. Don't go ahead and walk on the sides of the road. Why not? It's actually interesting. The Chayvah to less lay Rishusa, because since the Malach HaMaves doesn't have permission, since the Malach HaMaves doesn't have permission to just roam freely, Machbe Chavuye Umaski, he kind of lurks in the on the shoulder. You know, he lurks kind of on the side of the road. I will say, now it's interesting. It's interesting because if you look at this Lashon over here, the way the Gemara creates the contrast, right? If there's Dever in the city, there's this pestilence in the city, then understand that Malach HaMaves has been given free rein to kind of go about. It's interesting that the opposite of Dever is Shalom, right? Now, of course, you could just say that Shalom, peace, just means the absence of a plague. And that's clearly how the Gemara is using it. And I'll say, but it's interesting. how you see also, you know, the word dever could just as easily be vocalized as dibur, as speech. And it could be also just like kind of like on a more homiletic fashion. What the Gemara is talking about over here is that sometimes the greatest hashchasa, the greatest destruction, ultimately comes about through dibur, right? And ultimately, so called dibur be'ir, when there is destruction, when there is sin, when there is animosity that is created through difficult speech. So that's, you see this now. You know, there was an article in Times of Israel the other day. I think it was Times of Israel that there's like this TikTok thing happening now with the soldiers, and they're making these short clips and addressing it to elected officials. And essentially, it's like a short clip. And essentially, I don't remember the Hebrew phraseology of it, but essentially, what it's saying is, if what you're saying doesn't bring people together, stomatape. Close your mouth. And they have like these little clips that are recorded like everywhere. Everywhere. Right? And that's like that. If what you're saying doesn't bring Am Yisrael together, stomatape. Close your mouth. And you see it. Again, obviously, the news is always here to sensationalize a lot of things. So it's hard to know like what reality is, what we have. But like you see, like this animosity with the whole reason of all this, you know, being struck down. Like again, it's like awakening. It's like awakening these old wounds that are happening. So sometimes it's deeper. It's speech that causes the greatest amount of animosity. And speech, literally negative speech, harmful speech, attacking speech, allows the Malach HaMavos to walk in the middle of the road. Allows the Malach HaMavos to go unchecked. Conversely, when there's Shalom Be'ir, when there's Shalom in Klal Yisrael, then at the end of the day, the Malach HaMavos is relegated to the side roads. Malach HaMavos says no, right? In other words, we control where the Malach HaMavos travels. If we're at each other, Malach HaMavos gets the middle lane. He gets the middle road. If we have shalom between one another, Malach HaMavos is relegated to some shoulder, to some side roads. It's such an incredible idea. So the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, we'll say first of the intermediate wide lines, Dever be'ir, al yikanis adam yachel lebeis haknesses, shamalach HaMavos mafkit sham kelo. So what's this interesting? So if there's Dever in the city, person shouldn't walk in, you know, by themselves to a shul. Why? Because apparently the shul becomes the launching pad, right? The launching pad for the Malach HaMavos' activity. That's where he keeps his utensils. The Hanimi Lihecha, the Lokari Beit Ardiki, that's only if there's an activity there. The Lo Matzlu Be'asaro, or ultimately if there's not a minion. I will say along the same lines, why is it that a shul is the launching pad for the Dever? Because I will say sometimes the worst forms of attack and the worst forms of sin and the greatest animosity happens in places where we congregate. That's what it happens. I don't say how much crazy stuff happens in our shul, but I'm saying how much crazy stuff happens in shuls and how much machlokes happens in shuls and how much negativity sometimes is bred between unnecessarily. It becomes when there's sinna because of dibor. Sometimes it's the places where the Jews congregate that become the very hotbed of that animosity. And that becomes the launching pad for the Malach HaMavos. With the exception, of course, is Baruch Hashem, if you have children congregate, so the purity of children, or minyanim, right? Minyanim, a minyan, I will say, is the ultimate koach hamach. You know what the incredible thing about a minyan is? Right? If you have 9 people, and your sworn enemy walks in, and he's number 10, because of him, you could say Baruch Hu. Because of him, you could say Kaddish. Because of him, you could say Kiddusha. Is an incredible thing that even your sworn enemy makes the minyan. So minyan sometimes is that great koach hama'achid. I will say, sometimes we don't realize this. The power of davening with a minyan is not only simply that we get to say things that I wouldn't get to say as an individual, right? I could daven in my dining room also, right? But of course, if I don't daven in my dining room, I don't get kaddish, I don't get kiddusha, I don't get baruch hu. That's true. But in addition to that, a minyan is what creates achdus. Because a minyan is what binds us together. A minyan is what binds us together, no matter how we feel about each other. It's such an incredible idea. All right, let's go back there. Tana Rabbanan, klavim bochim, if dogs are crying, Malach HaMavos b'le'ir. Ultimately, that's a sign that the angel of death is in the city. Klavim esachakim, If the dogs are happy, they're having a good time, they're laughing, I guess is the wrong word, but they're jovial. I don't know, dogs jovial, right? But they're jovial, right? They're playing around. Eliyahu HaNavi Balayir. So apparently the Gemara is saying dogs can sense these kind of things. They could sense the Malach HaVavos, they could sense Eliyahu HaNavi. Bahani Mili, the less Behune Keva. Now, this is only assuming that there's not a female in the vicinity. Right, if there's a female in the vicinity, we could go ahead and attribute their exaggerated emotions to the attention of the female. But assuming there's no female, then Lamaisa, again, their cries ultimately are referenced to the Malach HaMavos, and ultimately, again, their laughter are referenced to Eliyahu HaNavi. But there's a whole discussion why dogs have this additional sense. Like, why is it that dogs and not others? I saw the Ben Yoyada brings down, very interestingly, he says, this is the reward for the dogs by Mitzrayim. Right, by Mitzrayim, the pasuk says, "V'chol kelev lo v'chol bnei Yisrael lo yicharas kelev l'shono." The idea that dogs didn't bark. The dogs didn't bark at us when we left. So the Gemara says. So the Ben Yoyada brings down. If I remember, he quotes someone. I remember who he quotes. Ben Yoyada quotes. He says that the reward for the dogs, with so to speak, being compliant and not barking when we left, is they were given this, I guess, what you'll call like a heightened sense of intuition. That they're able to go ahead and sense the Malach HaMavos, they're able to go ahead and sense Eliyahu HaNavi. Quite fascinating. All right, the Gemara goes weiter. Yosef, Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Asi, Kamed, Rabbi Yitzchak Nafka. Both say great Gemara. Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Asi, we're sitting in front of Rabbi Yitzchak Nafka. Listen to this. Mar Amalei, Lema Mar Shmaisesa, Umar Amalei, Lema Mar Agarata. So both say, listen to this. So Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Asi, one of them asks Rabbi Yitzchak Nafka, say, Rabbi, can you tell us a halacha? The other one said, no, Rabbi, I don't want to hear a halacha. I want to hear a garata. Okay, so what happened? Pasach l'mimer a garata v'lo shavik. So he started, so Rabbi Yitzchak, Yerushalayim, began to say a garata, but then one of the people there, the Gemara doesn't identify who said what, but he started to say the a garata, and then one of the Rabbanim interrupted him, shut him down, v'lo shavik. So Pasach l'mimer shmeis esa v'lo shavik. He then began to say halacha, and the other one shut him down. So he kept on getting interrupted, right? Because one wanted agarata, one wanted halacha, and neither would let him say the other type of teaching. So Amar Lahem, so this is cute, Rabbi Yitzchak Nafka says, Em shalachem mashal ma'adav dom. Let me give you a mashal to what's happening over here. Dom ala adam shiish lo shtei nashim. This can be compared to a man who has two wives. Two wives, right? You know it's not going to end well. Listen to this. Achos yalda v'achas zekena. One is very young and one is called more mature. More mature. So what happens? Yalda milaketes lo levanos. So we'll say the young wife doesn't want her husband to look old. So what does she do? Every time he has a white hair, she pulls out the white hair. She wants him to look young. Zikena milaketes lo shchoros. The more mature wife, the older wife, doesn't want him to look young. So what does she do? She pulls out the non-white hairs. Venimsa kereach mikan umikan. How is this guy going to end up at the end of the day? Bald. Right? So Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha says, you don't want me to say agarata. You don't want me to say halacha. Right? So I can't say anything. So what does he do? Amar lahem, ihaki, emelechu milsa deshavi letarbaichu. So he says to the two students, Rabbi Yaron, Rabbi Yossi, you know what? I'm going to say something that satisfies you with. I'm going to give over a ruling that's both agarata and halacha. What was it? What is it? Is it beautiful? Kiseitze ish umatza kotzin. So we'll say the pasuk talking about ish. That's why this is here, right? When the pasuk says the fire will go out umatza kotzin, and it'll find thorns. It'll find thorns and it'll destroy. We'll say again. This was the pasuk that we were dealing with over here. Yasei v'neach al gadish o akama o asada shalem yishalem hamavir esabeira. So listen to this. So the mercy now. So it looks like this. Teitze miatzma. Now, we'll say the way the pasuk is worded, kiseitze eish, sounds like what? Like the fire is moving of its own volition. Right? It's, in other words, that it's moving on its own. Yet, the end of the pasuk says, yishalim, yishalim, hamavir sabeira. Then it says, the pasuk says, the one who kindled it will go ahead and will repay the one who was damaged. So we'll say, so then that makes it sound like what? Someone kindled the fire. So Rabbi Sanaf is pointing out what appears to be the inconsistency in the pasuk. The pasuk beginning by making it sound like the fire is kind of moving on its own, doing its own thing. The end of the pasuk making us aware that there is someone who is liable for the fire. So which one is it? Both says a profound Gemara. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Alai l'shalim es ha-be'ira, shev arti. Hashem Baruch Hu says, so Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha understands that this pasuk is a metaphorical allusion to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And the Ribbono Shel Olam says, it is upon me to go ahead and repay the fire that I kindled. And I will say, just to give you the rest of this over here. So the way Rashi understands this drush is as follows. The beginning of the pasuk makes it sound like the fire started on its own, but it's actually a reference to the sins of Klal Yisrael. As a result of our negative spiritual behavior, we cause, Rashi says, "Nachnu garamnu lo shekilkanu v'eftiach HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'shayim kilu hi'abeira." So let's listen to this. We started the fire. We started the fire, right? We started the fire of the Beis HaMikdash. We started the fire of destruction. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, even though I didn't start it, even though I did not go ahead and cause it, I take it upon myself to repay the damage. I take it upon myself to fix it. I will say, is that not the greatest demonstration of love? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, even though I did not create the destruction, I did not kindle the fire, I didn't start the fire, nevertheless, I take it upon myself ultimately to rebuild all that has been destroyed. Incredible. Ani, the Gemara says, Alay l'shanim asabeir shevarti, Ani atzisi ish b'tzion, I'll treat it as if I lit the fire in Tzion shene emar, Vayotzes ish b'tzion v'atocha yisod osel, V'ani osid livnosa ba'esh, and I will rebuild with fire as well. Shene emar, V'ani eyele chomas ish saviv, ulekavot eye besocha. So what's this? So beautiful. So this was the Agarata. So the Agarata Rabbah says that even though we caused the fire, even though we caused the fire that ultimately resulted in the destruction, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I hereby take it upon myself, I pledge to you that I will rebuild it. It's amazing. Halavai, we should be zochet to see it, the karav. Shmai Sisa, so we'll say, in that same pasuk is an interesting halacha. So pasuk hakasa b'niskei mamono, v'siim b'niskei gufo. So we'll say, remember again, we also pointed this out before, one of the intriguing parts of the pasuk that we'll say is, that the pasuk begins, it says, kiseitse eish. So it's talking about my fire. So it sounds like fire is my property that goes out and does damage. But again, how does the pasuk end? Shalim yishalim hamavir es ha-be'era. The one who kindled the fire, which makes it sound like, again, that I myself am doing the damage. So which one is it? Is Eish my property, or is Eish an extension of me? To which the Gemara says, Lomar lachot, to teach me, isho vishum chitzyo. That ultimately, again, my fire is like my arrow. Just like my arrow is my koach, is my strength, so too, again, I will say, my fire is considered to be a manifestation of my koach as well. Beautiful, beautiful Gemara. So let's go right there. Vayisaved David vayor miyashkini mayim mibar beis lechem asher b'shar. So we'll say, this is actually interesting. So the Gemara quotes this pasuk from Shmuel Beis. We'll do the literal translation, but then we'll understand the Gemara understands that there is metaphorical significance as well. So vayisaved David. David HaMelech had a tie. He had a desire, and he said, what's the desire for? Who will bring me miyashkini mayim mibar beis lechem asher b'shar? Who will go ahead and bring me water from the well in Beis Lechem that is by the gate, right? Vayivaku shloshes hagibor machne plishtim vayishabu mayim mibor Beis Lechem asher b'shar. And three strong men reached the camp of the plishtim, drew water from the well in Beis Lechem and brought it back for David. Okay, so the Gemara says, what's going on over here? My kami baile. So the Gemara understands that the pasuk is not to be understood literally, but once again, there must be some type of metaphorical significance within this request. What was it that David HaMelech was asking for? My kami baile. Amar Rav Nachman. Tamun ba'ish kami baile. So it's fascinating. The Gemara actually understands that David HaMelech had a halachic question. What was his halachic question? What's the halach of tamun ba'ish? Let's talk about tamun ba'ish. We saw this, right? In other words, if fire damages something that is hidden, we saw this in yesterday's daf. If fire damages something that is hidden in the field, are you responsible for that level of damage or not? That's what David HaMelech desired. So the Gemara says, So again, David HaMelech was like, the Zalacha Rabbi Yehuda, that Shechayit for Tamun, or like the Rabbanon, that Shepata for Tamun, Upashtule, and ultimately, again, I was like, he asked this to the Sanhedrin, and the Sanhedrin answered him. Now, what did it answer him? So the Pashtay made the Pashtay. So we'll say, so again, we don't know what the Sanhedrin answered him because this is a machlokas in the Mishnah, right? This is still a machlokas contemporarily. So therefore, but whatever they answered, they answered. We'll say, there's a tremendous, tremendous Musar in this. David HaMelech had, according to this approach of Rava, David HaMelech had a halachic question. Yet how does it describe David HaMelech's desire for halachic answer? Vayis'ave. He desired. He desired. And what does it compare that desire to? A desire for water when you're thirsty. Right, so let's say, right, when you're parched, you're thirsty, somebody asks you, what would you pay for a cold glass of water? You know, whatever. So let's say, it's interesting, because I think what the Gemara is describing to us is that the key to spiritual success is to bring that same level of desire to Torah that we have for material things. Right? The same way I would have that desire, ultimately, again, for that glass of water. The same way I have that desire for that material item, right? We all desire different material items. I feel a sense of desire for it. If I could just bring that same level of desire to my ruchnius, that's how I could be successful. What makes a David? Vayis'ave. David has a type, has a desire, ultimately, again, to get the answer to this question. Incredible. Rav Huna, Rav Huna says, a different question. Rav Huna Amar Kedishim. This is fascinating. Kedishim the son of the Yisrael. So the Habamimtri Plishtim Behu. So I'll say here was the issue. There were piles of barley that belonged to Jews, and there were Plishtim that were hiding behind those piles. The Kamibayle, and ultimately again, David HaMelech had the following shiloh. Fascinating. Ma lahatzma asom amun chaveiro. We'll say, are you allowed to save yourself by destroying the property of your friend? So in this case, you'll also over here, the Plishtim were hiding behind Jewish piles of grain, of barley. So what did David HaMelech want to do? He wanted to set fire, he wanted to destroy the piles in order to root out the Plishtim. So are you allowed to do this? Shalchu le'asar lahatzil atzal mamachadero. You are not allowed to go out and save yourself by destroying your friends already. Now, both say, now let's clarify this. When David HaMelech asks, is it mutter? And they say it's asar, what they mean is like this. The Maharsha explains this. See, what it means is like this. David HaMelech was asking, if I destroy it, am I liable? Right? In other words, right now there's a mortal threat. I need to go ahead and burn down those piles of grain throughout the Plishtim. If I do so, am I financially liable or not? That was his question. It's not, are you allowed to? Of course you're allowed to. It's pikuach nefesh. There's a threat to life. With a threat to life, you could do anything. The David HaMelech asking is, if I do it, do I have to pay them back? The Sanhedrin responds, the answer is yes. In other words, you are allowed to destroy your friend's property in order to save your life, but you have to pay him back. That was just interesting. You have to pay him back. However, aval atam melech atam, but they said to David, but you are the king. Umelech poreis la soslo derech de'mocha biyado. And what's the good part about being king? Pretty much, you can do whatever you want. In other words, not whatever you want, but Lemaisa, what you do have control over is other people's property. So again, if a regular person were to destroy the property of his friend in order to save himself, while he is permitted to go out and destroy the property, he is financially liable for doing so. But you, David, you are the king, and therefore you could destroy the property, and there is no financial liability. Okay, so that's the opinion of Rav Huna, what's happening over here. Rabbanan vitim rabba, bar mari amru, gedishim disorin di Yisrael habu. In fact, I will say there were. This was David Shaila. There were piles of barley that belonged to Jews. Ugedishin da adoshin de plishtim, and then there were other piles that belonged to the Philistines, to the plishtim. The kami baylo. This is David Shaila. Mal li tol gedishin shal soron de Yisrael li tenef me behemto amanas l'shalim gedishin shal adoshin de plishtim. Fascinating. This was David Melch Shaila. His Shaila was, listen, I need to feed my animals right now. Can I take the barley that belongs to the Jew, with the knowledge that when we defeat the Plishtim, I'm going to have the spoils from that battle, and I'll repay the Jews with the piles of legumes, of Adashim, from the Plishtim. So what he was asking now is, can I take property from a Jew now, knowing that I'm going to replace it later on? Is that mutar? Shalchule, they said to him, Chavul Yoshev Rasha Gzil Yishalim. Afal Bishik Gzil Mishalim Rasha. So as it goes to the pasuk over here, that even though ultimately again the thief repays that which he stole, he's still called a thief. In other words, we'll say, stealing something with the intention to repay it is still called theft. Still called theft. However, so therefore they told David, it's usher. You can't take something from someone even if it is your express intention to go ahead and repay it. However, Aval Atamelech Atah
Umelech poris keder la'asos derech ve'in mochim biyad. However, David, you are the king. And as the king, you can take whatever you want, certainly if your intention is to go ahead and replace it. So I will say, this is a very beautiful, first of all, these happen to be fascinating halachic shilas in general, taking something from someone, right, but with the express intention to go ahead and replace it, destroying someone's property for the sake of saving my life, am I responsible for that damage or not? Two different alternatives. What is fascinating about this last thing that I will say is, David HaMelech is saying, can I take the property of a Jew and I'll replace it with the Plishtim after we defeat them? So the question presupposes that David HaMelech was absolutely sure that he was going to defeat the Plishtim, which I will say is the great emuna of David HaMelech. This is Vani Bechastucha Batachti Yageli Bivishua Secha. David HaMelech says, Vani Bechastucha Batachti Hashem, I am assured, I trust in your chesed, Yagel Libi Bishua Secha. My heart rejoices in your salvation. The Malbim points out over here that even David HaMelech, even before he actually attained victory, he celebrated his victories. Why? Vani bechastecha batachti. When you have emuna in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right, you know that you are going to be victorious. Sometimes how, when, what, where, but the greatness of David HaMelech is that his emuna was so profound that he rejoiced in the victories even before they actually materialized. That's how confident he was that the Ribono Shel Olam had his back. So it's incredible. That's this whole shaila. Can I go ahead and essentially take the property now of the Jew? And when, not if I defeat the Plishtim, when I defeat the Plishtim, I'll repay the Jews that I took from with the spoils of war. Incredible. So I'll say, now let's put this all together. So Gemara goes back there. So the Gemara says, so according to the opinion that says ultimately again that he was going to switch things, right? He was going to exchange, you know, the legumes to repay the other items that he took. That's why it says one pasuk. That's why the pasuk makes reference again to one field filled with legumes and another field filled with grain or barley. Alman de Omar lemikli ma'i baylu lahani trekrai. But according to the opinion that says that his shayla was, can I burn down Jewish property in order to root out the Plishtim? So then, why do you have two pesukim? Amar lecha dehavu nami gedishin da adashin di Yisrael dehavu mintri be Plishtim. Because again, you could say because they both say the Plishtim were hiding between two different types of piles. They were hiding behind piles of barley and behind piles of lentils. Bishlaman Darmel Mikli, according to the opinion that says Darmel Shaila was, can I burn down the produce that belongs to a Jew in order to root out the Plishtim? Hainu Dixiv, Vasyase Besocha Chelka, Vayasila, Eleman Darmel Achlufe. But according to the opinion that says that he wanted to exchange, in other words, take the barley and pay it back with legumes, my Vayasila, ultimately, what does it mean it was saved? The Lo Shaviklu, because the Sanhedrin didn't let him do this. Okay? So the Gemara says, the Shaviklu lachlufe. Bishlama hani tarati hani dirsiv trei krai. So it's going to the first two opinions. I understand why you needed two psukim. Tap of Samach Aleph 61a. Elman domer tamun beish kami boile. Mai boile krai. So I'll say, but according to the opinion that he was asking about tamun, right? He was asking about what's the halacha of something is hidden in a field and then it's destroyed by fire. What are these psukim doing? So according to those opinions, you have to say David HaMelech was asking two shailas. One shaila was about tamun, and the other shaila was about one of the other two questions. Either the permissibility of burning down, of destroying the property of a Jew in order to save yourself, or the permissibility of taking something from a Jew with the intention of replacing it with something else later on. Okay, Bishlom the Mandar Hani Tarti. So according to the opinion that says it was one of the two aforementioned ideas, possibilities, Dichsiv, follow Ava David Lishtosam. So we'll say, so here's what's interesting. So the way the Pasuk reads, so remember again, what happened? David HaMelech says, oh, if only, remember the Lashon was, Vais Ava David, David HaMelech desired, and he said, who will bring me water? Mi Ashkeni Mayim. That is from the well in Beis Lechem, that is by the gates. So just to understand, by the way, now the Gemara interprets this to mean, David HaMelech desires to know the answer to a shayla. Who has the answer to the shayla? It's in Beis Lechem by the Shar. The Shar, I remember again, Typically, a Beis Din would meet by the gates of the city. So for David HaMelech, ultimately what he's saying is, these are the questions I have of the Sanhedrin that sit by the gates. Now, the Pasuk reads, I will say that there were three strong men who breached into the camp of the Plishtim. They drew water. They got the water for David. They brought it back, and David did not drink it. Instead, he poured it out for Hashem. Okay, so I will say, so what does this mean? They got the water. Three strong men got the water, but David Melch wouldn't drink it. So what does it mean? So according to the first two opinions, that the question was either, or the previous two opinions, that the question was either, can I burn down Jewish property, can I destroy Jewish property throughout the Plishtim, or can I take the Jewish barley and replace it with Philistine lentils? So when it says that he didn't drink it, it means he didn't do these things, because ultimately, again, he was told by the Sanhedrin that it was also. In other words, even though he had a license to do it as king, David HaMelech chose not to do it. According to the opinion that says that David HaMelech's shayla was about Tamun, what is the liability if you go out and you destroy, if you burn down a field and there's hidden property inside of it? Is there liability or not? So I will say, so that is just the Gemara. In other words, that whether it's like Rabbi Huzza the Rabbanon, that's a ruling. What does it mean that David HaMelech didn't drink it? What does it mean he didn't drink the ruling? Delo aminu mishmaihu. It was that he did not say over the ruling in the name of the three men who brought him the ruling. Why? Amar kach mikublani mibeisdino shel Shmuel haramasi, because I have a Kabbalah from the basin of Shmuel Hanavi, call out Moser asmo lamos al divrei Torah in omrim dvar halacha mishmo. So this is very interesting. What's the story asim Shmuel? That whoever places himself in mortal danger in order to secure a halachic ruling, we do not go ahead and say over that halachic ruling in his name. And as I will say, why not? Because what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants more than anything from us is to live. A person is not supposed to put themselves in mortal danger in order to go ahead and secure a halachic ruling. So therefore, again, and the penalty for that is if you do that and you secure the halachic ruling, we don't give over that ruling in your name. So therefore, I will say it's close. So it sounds like, according to this approach, David HaMelech was kind of wondering out loud. You know, he was kind of thinking to himself out loud. You know, what is the halacha of Tamun? If only someone could bring me the halacha. But apparently he didn't mean literally for anyone to endanger themselves and get the halacha. Three people went ahead and endangered themselves and get the halacha. They brought David HaMelech back to halacha. He said thank you, but he poured it out, so to speak. Poured it out, meaning that he didn't say it over in their names because he felt that their conduct was wrong. One does not put themselves in mortal danger in order to secure a halachic ruling. Incredible. Vayasech osam l'Hashem. Instead, he poured it out for Hashem. What does that mean? So according to the first two approaches, namely that deals with burning down someone else's property to save yourself, or stealing from one with the intention to replace it with another, even though David HaMelech was entitled to do both of these things, he didn't. He, so to speak, he poured it out for Hashem, which means at the end of the day, he did not avail himself of a ruling that he could have. Since he was king, he could have done all of those things. But so to speak, he pours it out for Hashem, meaning he didn't do it. He didn't take advantage of his monarchical rights. El Mandarar, Taman Ba'ish, Mai Vayasach Osam LaHashem. But ultimately, I will say, according to the opinion that he was asking about Taman, what does it mean that he poured it out for Hashem? Da'amrinu Mishma Digimar. So this goes back to what we said before, that he did not go ahead and relate this ruling in the name of the people who brought it to him. Rather, again, he ultimately related it literally in the name of Hashem, meaning in the name of our Gemara, the name of tradition. Okay, I would say, incredible and overwhelming Gemara. Back to Baba Kama. Here we go. Avra Geder. So we'll say now, remember, we are focusing on Eish over here. We're focusing on liability or damage due to fire. So we'll say, so let's say again, Avda Geder Shugavo Dal Ramas, O Derech Rabim, O Nar Potter. So we'll say, let's say I kindle a fire in my property. But what I did is I made a fence. I made a wall that is at least 4 amas tall, right? And the fire got over it. Right? I want to say, or I went ahead and made my fire in my property, and between my property and Reuven's property, there's a Rosh Hasharabim. I will say now, Rosh Hasharabim is a minimum of 16 amos wide. Rashi points out over here, Yudvav amos, Megalos, right? That's that we know tomorrow from our Shabbos days. The definition of Rosh Hasharabim is 16 amos wide. Onar, or there is a river that divides between me and my neighbor. And I will say, somehow, the fire traversed these areas. The fire got over the wall. The fire went across Rosh Hasharabim, or the fire got across the river. In all three of these cases, if the fire gets across these areas, I am potter. I am exempt. Why? Because they will say this is not normal. Right? The normal situation is a wall of 4 amos or more prevents a fire from spreading. A river prevents a fire from spreading. The area of a Rosh Hasharabim prevents the fire from spreading. So we'll say, so if a fire gets past this, at the end of the day, it's an ones, it's an extenuating circumstance, and I am not liable. Says the Gemara back, Tanya, of Rageder Shugavo Arba Amos Chayiv. Yet we'll say the Braisa says that if a fire gets over a wall that is 4 amos, you are Chayiv. So you see from here that a wall of 4 amos is not enough to Shugavo, so it contradicts the Mishnah. Amra Papa, no. Tana Didan Kachasha Milamala Lamata. So we'll say, it's actually just a different reckoning. Our Mishnah is actually focusing on the wall from the top down. How so? So I'll say, so our Mishnah looks like this. Shesh Amos Pater. So if you have a wall of 6 Amos, you're Pater. Chamesh Amos Pater. 5 Amos, you're Pater. Ad Arba Amos. As long as the wall measures at least 4 Amos, you are Pater. You've done your job. Tana Bra, the author of the Braisa, Milamata Lamala Kachash. If he's looking at it from the bottom up. Shtei Amos Chayiv. Right, if the wall is 2 amos yichayiv, 3 amos yichayiv, ad 4 amos, until the wall reaches 4 amos, you will be chayiv. So I'm going to say they're actually agreeing that a wall of 4 amos is enough of a barrier. Just they're looking at it again from the bottom up versus from the top down. Okay, Amar Rava, dalet amos sha'amru depatra afilu b'sdei kotzim. So I'm going to say Rava says that when we say that a wall of 4 amos is enough to keep the fire from spreading, that's even true if it's a field that's filled with thorns. As we saw before, thorns are highly flammable. Rapapa gives a very important qualification. He says the way this works is, it's not 4 amos from the ground, but rather, again, it's a wall of 4 amos from the top of the thorn bushes. So that's the idea. So in other words, let's say the thorn bushes, you know, are 2 amos high. Effectively, you would need a 6 amo wall. So 4 amos begins at the top of the thorn bushes and above. Okay. Amar Rav. Rav says, both say that is very interesting. Lo shana ela bekolachos. Furthermore, Rav says, we're only talking about, again, a fire, kolachos means a fire that extends upwards. Right, so if you have an ascending fire, the way the fire is that extends upwards, that's when a wall that is 4 amos is enough. Ava b'nichfefes. So I'm going to say nichfefes is like a crawling fire. A fire that ultimately, and I'll look at Rashi just a moment. Ela b'kolachos, eish shekolech mitamar ba'olan lemala. So a kolachos fire is an ascending fire, a fire that goes up in a pillar, versus a nichfefes. Rashi says, aval nichfefes, sharuach mata osa. We'll say this is a fire that kind of slinks a little bit more along the ground, and the wind actively pushes it. V'kofel etzdadin umafsik hashal heves v'doleges. So we'll say this is very interesting. So according to the first part of Rashi, this is a fire where sometimes when the wind blows it, even like a little chelik of the fire detaches from the primary fire. Now you can see this. We'll say sometimes you see this, right? In like fires and winds where a part of the fire could detach from the primary fire. So again, we could put these two things together. It's a crawling fire. And a crawling fire, apparently, again, is able to traverse larger areas and maybe even is possible to overcome certain obstacles. So Rav says, when does a 4 amo wall help you with fire protection? That's only if it's a ish kolachas, a fire that goes up in a pillar. But if it's a creeping fire, like a crawling fire, then it could very well be that even these barriers will not work. So this is incredible. But a nichfefes, even if you have 100 amos wall high, or even 100 amos space between yourself and your neighbor, ultimately, again, that fire still poses a danger. And therefore, you're chayiv. Shmuel says, Mastisa bin nichfefes. No. Our Mishnah is talking about nichfefes. Aramish is talking about a crawling fire. And with a crawling fire, ultimately, again, that's when a four-ama wall or a river or a sarab is enough to separate. Aval kolachas, afil b'kol shuhu. But ultimately, I will say, with a pillar fire, even a wall of much less or even a space of much less will prevent the fire from spreading. So I will say, so a fundamental machlokes in terms of the nature of fires, right? What type of fire is the Mishnah referring to? Machlok is Rav and Shmuel. So Tanakhav, I'll say to Rav, there's a brisa that supports Rav. The Medrash Amur and Bosa, when is this so that the four amma wall or the space of 16 amos or a river is good protection against the fire and limits your liability? That's Bikolachas. That's with the fire that ascends like a pillar. Ava benichtefes, but with the creeping fire, veid simitsunyala. I will say, the problem with the creeping fire, I will say, is that a creeping fire is able to go ahead and use anything for fuel, right? Especially so if there's wood available, afilu admeya mil chayiv. I will say, that's dramatic. So like, you might live in the middle of nowhere. Your next neighbor is 100 miles away. But with a nichfefes fire, like Rav says, you would actually be liable. You'd be, because that's the nature of that fire. Avra nar, o shalulis, shem rechavim ches, amos potter. On the other hand, I will say, even with a nichfefes fire, if it somehow gets past the river, right, or a shalulis, we don't know what a shalulis is, we'll see that in just a little bit. Even if the shalulis itself is 8 amos wide, you would be potter. So we'll say, what we begin to see over here is the limitations even of nichfefes fire liability. So it seems to be that with a kolachas fire, right, we'll call it a pillar fire, so the methods mentioned in the Mishnah, right, either again a wall of 4 amos, or a river, or ultimately in the space of Rishram 16 amos is enough to protect your neighbor from danger. With an Ichfefes fire, that's a much more sinister fire. But again, even that, I will say, apparently won't traverse a river or a shalulis. Okay, so we'll see what that means in just a bit. So derech harabim, so I will say, remember again, the Mishnah says, generally, if you have derech harabim Rishram 16 amos separated between you and your neighbor, that's enough precaution for a fire. So man tana, so who's the famous? I'm a Rabbi Elazar. He's Rabbi Elazar. This man, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, sheish esrei amos kederach shurabim. So most Rabbi Elazar is of the opinion that the definition of a shurabim is any area, any road that's at least 16 amos wide. Okay. Onar, but say first white line at the bottom. Onar or a river. Rav Amar Nar Mamish. So Rav says literally again, it's a river. So what the Mishnah is saying is, if halacha lemaisa, I light a fire in my field, and there is a river, right, between me and Reuven, that is enough of fire protection. And therefore, if the fire somehow gets over the river, I am not liable. Shmuel says, Arisa didalai. Shmuel said, it could even refer to an irrigation ditch. Even if you have even an irrigation ditch, under normal circumstances, should be enough protection to go ahead and prevent the fire from spreading. So mandar nar mamish afan abdulakamaya. So what's here's interesting. So Rav, who says that refers to a real river, this refers even to a riverbed without water. Whereas the riverbed itself usually is enough to stop the fire from spreading. Umandama Arisa Didalai, and the one who says an irrigation ditch, I ispe maya in abalespe maya lo. Obviously, I will say the irrigation ditch only prevents fire from spreading if what? If there's water inside of it. So the Gemara says, San Hasim, we learn, ve'elum afsikin lepeya. So let's listen to this. Now, I will say, here's the halacha. By Peya, Mishnah Peya explains that every field has an obligation of Peya, right? You have to leave a corner of your field for the ani and for the poor. I will say, the shaila is what happens if you have a tract of land that has a division. What's considered to be a halachic division so that you have to reckon the field as two separate fields and therefore each one requires their own peah? So ve'ilum afsikin lepeah. These are the things that divide up fields for peah purposes. Hanachal, a stream. Shalulis, again a shalulis, which I still don't know what it means. V'derech hayochid, a pathway used by the individual. V'derech harabim, or a pathway used by the public. These are all things which, if they run through a field, essentially make the field into two separate fields, which would then require two peos, right? Two corners. So my shalulis, by the way, what's a shalulis? I'm Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, makom shemei gesham sholulin sham. A place where rainwater is collected. Rav Bibi, Amar Rav Yochanan, amas maim shemechalekes. Shemechalekes, shagal lagavel. Ultimately, again, it's a channel of water. It's a channel of water that ultimately, again, has its own banks. So the opinion that says the place where rainwater pools, kol shekin amos mayim. Certainly, again, that applies to a channel of water. The one who says that it's a channel of water, but ultimately, in a say, a place where rainwater collects, that will not go ahead and divide up the field. Why? Da'ano, because da'ano ba'agani da'aram mikr. Because both said we will say that a place where water, rainwater pools, those are called literally again the bowls, B-O-W-L-S, the bowls of the land. In other words, both said those are considered to be just depressions in the actual karka, but not considered to be a hefsek. Okay, incredible, both said. So remember again, the reason why this is bringing it up is the Gemara is suggesting that whatever is considered to be a division in the field for payah, to make it two distinct properties, maybe should also serve as what? As a barrier, ultimately, again, for ish damages as well. Good. We'll say, we still have to come back. We still have to come back and talk about what type of price. Here's what we emerge with from the Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us that when you go ahead, if I go ahead and I kindle a fire in my field, I'm obligated to take precautions to ensure that my fire does not enter into your field. So the Mishnah gives us three types of precautions. Number one, a wall of four amos. Number two, space, right? Space of 16 amos. Or number three, the presence of a river, a body of water, a body of water. Now, the unresolved piece we have over here is what kind of fire does that help with? Kolachas, nechfefes. Hold on to that. We're gonna do all of this at once. So we'll say Mishnah. Samech Alpha 61b Mishnah. Hamadik Beso Shalo Ad Kamatavar Ad Leika. So both of this is very interesting. If I light a fire in my property, how far do I have to assume a fire could travel? Which I will say essentially means like this. If I'm going to light a fire in my property, now this would appear to be talking about a case where I don't have one of the aforementioned items. I don't have a wall, right? I don't have a Rosh Sarabim, and I don't have a river. So the shaila is like, what's my fire setback? Like, in other words, how far into my property do I have to light a fire to ensure that it doesn't spread to my neighbor? Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Omer, Ro'en Osa Kilu Be'emsa Beis Kar. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says you have to view it as if you're in the middle of a base car. So let's say, if you can imagine what that means is, just to give you a number, that means Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says you have to light your fire at least 137 amos away from your neighbor. So let's say you can do the math on that. An amos is a foot and a half. An amos is a foot and a half. So you have to go ahead and light your fire 137 amos away from your friend. Now, say, so again, this is talking about you don't have a wall, you don't have a Rosh Hashanah, you don't have a river dividing between you and your neighbor, 137 amos away from your neighbor. That's what you need to do. That's what Elazar ben Azariah. Elazar Omer, Tez Zayin Amos Kedosh Ram. Elazar says, no, 16 amos. 16 amos. So we'll say, that's a pretty big distinction. 137 amos, 16 amos. So Elazar, because again, Elazar says, we just said before, that if you have a Rosh Sarabim dividing between you and your neighbor, that's enough of a barrier. So I don't understand. So that's all you need, 16 amos. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Chamishim Amos. Rabbi Akiva says 50 amos. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Shalim Yishalim Averes Habeira, Hakol Lefi Hadaleva. Rabbi Shimon's position is interesting. Rabbi Shimon says, you can't give an objective amount. It all depends on what? The fire. What I was about to say, it's the fire, it's the weather, there are so many variables involved in this. Rabbi Shimon says, you have to take necessary fire precautions. What is the definition of those precautions? I can't give you an objective answer to that. Everything is going to depend on the fire, where you live, atmospheric conditions, weather, all this other stuff. But let's say Rabbi Shimon shir b'dleika, I don't understand. Rabbi Shimon doesn't have a shir by fire. He doesn't have an objective shir. About tonight we learned. Lo yamin adam tan Rabbi Zoha bayis. So this is interesting halacha. A person should not go ahead and set up a stove, right, an oven, inside of his house. Ela imken yesh al gabo gova dalet amos. Unless, of course, I will say you need at least dalet amos between your fire and the ceiling. Right? This is Talmudic fire safety. Right? Why I will say if you have less than that amount, what are we concerned about? That the heat of the oven is going to cause the ceiling to catch on fire. Hayamami dubalia, if you have your oven in an upper story, ache tachtav ma'aziva shlosha tvachim. So let's say, so therefore, what that means is if you have an upper story, you have to go ahead and put three tvachim of plaster underneath your oven. Right? So the ubikira tefach, and with the stove, one tefach, then hizik, and if you cause damage, so let's say this would be a case of, let's say, where there's one person living in the lower story, one person living in the upper story. If you cause damage because you did not follow these fire safety tips, mishalim mash hizik, ultimately, again, you have to pay what you damage. Rabbi Shimon Amar Lo, Nam Rishun Halalu, Elishim Hizik Pater Milashalim. Rabbi Shimon says again, but if you follow these shiurim, then obviously what? You're pater from damage. So we'll say, so the point over here, the point over here is, you see Rabbi Shimon saying, that there are shiurim for fire damage. So Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Aravua, Hakol lefi gova hadleika. Everything depends on the height of the fire. Amar Rav Yosi, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Halacha k'Rabbi Shimon, V'chein Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Shmuel, Halacha k'Rabbi Shimon. So I must say, at the end of the day, whereas Rabbi Shimon does give shiurim for a stove, right before an oven, that's because those are more quantified realities. So you could say a stove, an oven needs, right, 4 amos of heat release on top. An oven requires 3 tefachim of plaster underneath it. These are objective. But again, when it comes to actual fire, halacha lemaisa, Rabbi Shimon is going to say, I can't give you an objective shear. It all depends on the intensity of the fire. And the Gemara says, the halacha follows Rabbi Shimon. I will say, by the way, that is how the Rambam paskins, that in terms of assessing how much, right, if I light a fire in my field, how much distance or what precautions do I need to take to ensure that that fire does not spread to my neighbor? We're going to see that halacha lemaisa, that is going to depend on the nature of the fire and a whole variety of other conditions that exist when I light it. But hold on. Mishnah. Here it is. If you kindle a fire, right? I light a fire in my field, and now what happens? It goes into Reuven's field. That's what we're assuming right now. We're assuming that's the case. It goes into Reuven's field, destroys Reuven's field. And it turns out that there were other utensils hidden inside the field. Rabbi Huda on Rishali Masha Besocho. Rabbi Huda says you pay for everything in the field. The stuff you know about, the stuff you don't know about. The Chacham say, Eino Mishalim Ela Gadish Shel Chidon Shel Sa'orin. You only pay for the wheat or the barley. In other words, this is the machlokes tamun. Rabbi Huda says, you do pay for tamun, even for items hidden. The Rabbanan say, you don't pay for tamun. Let's say there was a kid, like an animal, like a goat, right? Bound up, it was tied up in the field, and therefore when you kindle the fire, ultimately the goat was killed. Or there was an eved standing there, and the eved, chas v'shalom, was incinerated, was killed. What's the halacha? Chayiv. Ultimately, you're chayiv. So what that means is, you're chayiv for the gedi, you're chayiv for the kid, but you're pater for the eved. Why are you pater for the eved? The eved should have run away. In other words, go, move. Right? Eved kafas lo gedi samachlo. What happens if the eved was tied up in the field and the kid was there? Right? The nisraf imo, and ultimately, again, the kid was killed along with the eved, then pater. I'm pater. Well, say, now why am I pater? Because I'm chayiv for the death of the eved. Right? Once you're chayiv for the death, you have a kimle b'drabimine. Whenever you're chayiv a death penalty, you're exempted from other associated monetary damages. So since I'm chayiv for the eved, I'm pater for the gedi. Umodin chan Rabbi Huda b'madlekes habiro shumashalim kamasha b'socho. And both say, listen to this. Even the chachamim who normally say that you are pater for tamun agree that if you ignite someone's home, their home, you're chayiv for everything inside the home. Why? Shekein derech b'nei adam laniach b'batim. Because we'll say it's common for people to keep all kinds of things in their field. In other words, the reason that Rabbanan exempt a person for tamun is why? Because halacha lemaisa might not be normal for people to keep kelim utensils in their field. But if you ignite someone's home, it's normal for a person to put everything in their home, and therefore halacha lemaisa will be chayiv for everything. Abosai, stop here. Shkoyach. Okay.